Dan Murphy, and he is a presentation of David L. Young of Dexter Realty. What's going on, Murph?
How's it going, fellas? I'm just trying to defrost my toes after leaving the rink.
You need some foot warmers. Do they have those?
Hot shots.
Yeah.
What are those called? Hot shots? Or you kind of broke them up and you put them in your gloves or your boots?
Yeah, you put them in your gloves and your boots to try and stay warm when your extremities are getting freezing. But that's usually when you're outdoors, not just at the rink. Tell me. Go ahead.
I do have a heater, though, at the rink now for up in my little studio there. That's how cold it is. A poodle.
It is.
Just being a poodle, I asked for a heater, and so I got one. And I got to be honest, it's glorious. It's like a little heater up my feet, and I don't have to wear a big parka anymore. And, you know, I'm old now. My circulation isn't great, so I need it.
So what, in between periods, you're just sitting there in a parka watching the game?
I was, to be honest. Like I told Yannick Hansen when he came on the other day, I was like, hey, believe me, it's cold, so bring a jacket. He not only brought a jacket, he brought gloves, and he wore it the whole time except when we were on the air. So it's not just me being soft.
Okay, the man from Denmark had to bring gloves. That's I don't know if they're going to let him back into the country after admitting that. All right, Murph, we're all pretty depressed after watching what happened last night against the Canucks. 3-1, they're winning. 3-0, they're winning. They end up losing. We've been talking a lot about music the last couple of times you've been on the show. What's the song you're pulling up after a loss like last night?
Oh, boy, you should have given me some warning on this. Let me think about this. Maybe I'll try to get one for the end of the show, but...
think about it.
I go again, maybe? Maybe? Whitesnake?
Yeah.
Here okay. I go again on my own. Maybe they're trying to do too much, but I'm like anyone else. Like, no fans in the building last night, but I guarantee you if there were, and you could still feel it, actually, when that first goal was scored late in the first period by Edmonton, you could just sense it. Right? I mean, it was the time of the goal. It was how the goal was scored. You know, a top line on the ice, a bad giveaway, a bit of a flyby, a goal that probably should have been saved. And there was a lag. Like, there just shouldn't have been any life for the Oilers at that moment in the game. And all of a sudden, there was. And you kind of felt like, you don't want to say there's 40 minutes left, but considering the way that this team had lost a couple games recently, you could tell that was kind of the start of impending doom, like a self-fulfilling prophecy that something bad was going to happen. And it didn't in the second. They did chase the whole second. They were outclassed. But it did in the third. And I tell you, like, when that goal went in, you guys can't tell me you weren't thinking, here we go again, because I certainly was at that point.
Yeah, that goal on the first shift of the third period, I was immediately like, okay, this is they're in tough now. And McDavid started buzzing, right? He's hitting that post in the second there. You could just tell, and it's like the law of attraction, right? You could sense it from the players that they weren't confident that they'd be able to close this lead down, and they played that way in the third period. They were timid, and you know, Travis has been mostly, you know, he's always supportive of his players. He doesn't go out of his way to call guys out. If anything, he goes out of his way to make sure he's standing up for them. But last night after the game, you could really start to sense that his frustration levels are even reaching a boiling point at this point, Murph.
Yeah, and he didn't call guys out by names, but you could kind of read between the lines. And I think he was probably directing some at Besser, some, you know, at Miller in those post-game comments. And that's why I think he came back today and defended his guys, right? Like, he kind of got the shot out of the way last night, knowing that we would talk about it, we would run with it, and we would speak about it, because he was as pointed as he's going to be. And then he comes back today knowing he's going to get the questions about certain players. And then he's backing them and defending them once again. So, I mean, I think it's coaching 101. Travis has never been one guy to single people out. I mean, I don't think that's a great way of doing things unless you're really on your last legs. But, you know, I thought he was very pointed in his post-game comments. And then today he knew he was going to get the questions and he was ready to back his guys. So, you know, I thought he handled both situations actually quite well, even if you don't have to really believe in everything that he said today.
Well, the lineup changes. We'll see what actually happens tomorrow against the Oilers. But JT Miller on that third line, when you make a move like that, it's to send a message. But in regards to his game, do you want to also put him on the third line just to get him working more? Because generally when you put a skill guy further down the lineup, you're just saying, hey, work harder. Go with that bottom six and work harder.
I think you want JT to play a more direct game. I mean, I think if this team was buzzing and playing with a ton of confidence, you would give those guys a little more leeway to hang on to the puck and make some plays. But that's not what's been working recently, right? That's what's been causing some problems. So maybe this is a way of saying, okay, JT, you're on a more north-south line, not an east-west line. Let's start playing that way. Let's be more direct. Let's not try to make so many plays at the offensive blue line, perhaps when there's no one back. So I think that's probably the message there. And, you know, sometimes Travis makes these moves at practice to kind of get a look. But I really do think he's going to – and I don't think they'll skate in the morning, so we're not going to get a look tomorrow. But I kind of feel like this isn't just like a fake. I think we are going to see tomorrow there be some changes, and I wouldn't be surprised if all the top three lines were different like they were at practice today. Now, it might not last very long, but I think when you have a game like last night, despite the fact that prior to last night you thought that the process was trending in the right direction, you have to give it a different look. And I'm not saying it's going to stay that way forever, but I wouldn't be surprised if he does start the game that way, and today it wasn't just like a little fake.
We've kind of gone through the whole ring of criticism, right? We've gone at Jim Benning, we've done that conversation, gone through the players. It seems more focus is coming on Travis as it continues, but what's Travis's role in the early season struggles here, Murph?
Is this like the seven stages of guilt? We've basically gone through like everything right now.
Who's to blame?
Yes.
Well, I mean, listen, I've always said that the overall results right now, I still believe this is, you know, Jim Benning made this bed, and I think probably he's at the top of the food chain. But you can't absolve the coaching staff of all of it, right? I mean, these guys are the ones that get the players out there. But I don't see any evidence of the team quitting on them. Like, you don't jump out to 2-0 leads and 3-0 leads by not being ready to play for your coach. Now, being able to execute and hold on to these leads and put a system forth where guys can follow it and the players you have can execute it, you know, certainly the coaches have to be brought into question there. But I still think that overall Travis plays a role in it, but not the biggest role.
He's Dan Murphy, Sportsnet, of course, joining us here on Reach Deep. I was pretty surprised this morning to wake up to the news coming out of Montreal on Claude Julien. Yeah. But, you know, that market, it seems like everybody in Montreal not as surprised as I was. But I guess a lot of fans are making the connection, like, hey, if Montreal's in that spot and they're making that move, what have the Canucks been waiting for? Do you see that sort of a connection, or, you know, how much different is the situation in Vancouver?
I don't really see a parallel there. First off, even before last night's game, I had someone send me a meme, and it was the shot of Gerard Gallant getting in the cab, except they had Claude Julien's face on the body. So, like, okay. Even prior to last night's game, those were out there. I'll say this, like, you can check the receipts if you want. I always thought that this season, in the summer, we talked about it. We thought it was going to be a drop-off of the Canucks. I know that they had their little run in the postseason, but in the grand scheme of things, I think it was always going to be a step back this season. I thought that the expectations were a little too high just based on that bubble performance. Bergevin went out and spent $100 million in contracts in the offseason. You know, there were a lot of expectations. And I think more so the start that the Habs got off to, this is a move you can make to try to wake the team up because you're still in a playoff spot, right? What would a coaching change in Vancouver do right now? Well, first off, I don't think whoever you brought in is going to make enough of a difference to get this team back in the playoffs. I truly don't. Secondly, if Aquilini is being honest with not making a change of GM or coach right now, well, I mean, I think the GM has still got to be on the table in the off season. So are you going to fire a coach now only to bring in a new GM in the off season to make a different coaching change? Do you feel like you have somebody who could be interim right now on that bench? I just think it seems like you're in a little bit of purgatory here. So I don't think the situation's are the same. I mean, Montreal, you're bringing in a new coach. The 5-on-5 play has been great. Their special teams have been terrible. So you're hoping to get that in-season bump to wake the team up, get them moving back in the right direction, because the playoffs are very much not only a possibility, they should still be expectation there. Vancouver's not in the same situation.
Yeah, the expectations are definitely different. All right, you know, we see the demise of Claude Julien in Montreal. He gets fired, but it means progress for another former Canuck. Alex Burrows moving on up to the NHL. There's a lot of buzz around Burrows and what he could do in the NHL. Murph, you've known him well going back over a decade. What's in this cards for Burrows? Is he going to be able to stick at the NHL level, especially an assistant or potentially a head coach one day?
Well, I mean, I think for right now, the one good thing you have is that he is going to be a very good conduit with the players, right? Because he's not too far removed from playing. And so I think that's probably a bit of a bonus. You know, I think certainly there's value. He's a very smart guy. And when you're talking special teams, like, he was an expert penalty killer. He never really got too much power play work, but he's going to help you out in those situations. So I think he does have a future. I mean, I think some fans in this market are bummed that, and maybe thinking the Canucks dropped the ball, like especially losing Manny and not having Alex here. But I just don't think this was the play for his family yet. He's finally got back to home. His wife finally has support for the three kids when he's, you know, working and on the road. So I don't think it was a possibility at this time. I wouldn't say it's not going to be down the road. But I certainly think, you know, Alex has a future in the National Hockey League. I always kind of thought it was going to be more on the management side instead of the coaching and player development side, but I guess that could still play out in a different way. But I would not, you know, rule out a Burrows return at some point to the Vancouver market. I certainly wouldn't.
Murph, appreciate the time as always. Thank you.
All right, boys.